August 4th, 2021, 3:30, I'd like to call to order the monthly KUA board meeting. We please rise to pledge allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, thank you. Before I go on to the next item on the agenda, Director Van Meter, can you hear us? Can you communicate with us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I sure do. Hear you loud and clear right now. Okay, good.
Very good.
Thank you. I'll entertain a motion to approve the agenda for today.
I make a motion.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
It passed. We'll go to the awards and presentation. Brian, would you have the honor of handling that?
Yes, Director Ortega. Item D1, KUA's electric safety calendar winners. This was an item that was pushed back a couple of months due to COVID. We've got, I believe, 11 of the 12 winners in the room. And to come introduce this item, I'd ask our communication specialist, Adriana, to introduce the item and our winners.
Thank you, Brian. So good afternoon. I'd like to welcome everyone to our 2021 KUA calendar contest ceremony. Thank you all for being here, and congratulations to the students. We have a plaque to present each of you to recognize your accomplishment. Once your name is called, please come up to receive your plaque and get a photo with our directors, who are going to remain behind the desk for social distancing purposes. After every student is called, we will go out and take a group photo in front of the building. This calendar is the end result of Kissimmee Utility Authority's 27th Annual Calendar Art Contest, open to Osceola County students from kindergarten through sixth grade. The contest is designed to promote electrical safety among students and their families. This year, we had a total of 740 entries from 7 Osceola County elementary schools, including public, private, charter, virtual, and homeschool students. Since we were unable to have our traditional ceremony in January due to COVID-19 restrictions, we are excited to formally recognize all of our 2021 calendar winners here today in person. The 12 winning students have their artwork featured in this 2021 calendar and each receive a $150 cash prize. I'll start by recognizing our grand prize winner, Camille Mapallo, of Holy Redeemer Catholic School. Her artwork was featured on the cover of this year's calendar and also in the month of January. As a part of her reward for being the grand prize winner, her artwork was featured on one of our KUA trucks. Congratulations, Camille. Thank you, Camille. Well done. Next, we have Valentina Vargas of Central Avenue Elementary. Her artwork was featured in the month of February, titled Energy Safety. Congratulations, Valentina. Thank you. Next is Madeline Roman of Flora Ridge Elementary. Her artwork was featured in the month of March, titled Be Safe Around Electricity. Congratulations, Madeline.
All right.
Thank you, Madeline. We have Brianna Mora of Holy Redeemer Catholic School. Her artwork was featured in the month of April, titled Never Fly Kites Near Utility Poles. Congratulations, Brianna.
Well done.
Now we have Annabella Gomez of Holy Redeemer Catholic School. Her artwork was featured in the month of May, titled Electrical Safety, Where We Play. Congratulations, Annabella. We have Alenka Gaspar of Osceola Science Charter School. Her artwork was featured in the month of June, titled A Dangerous Storm. Congratulations, Alenka. Thank you, Alenka. Brianna Buplin of Holy Redeemer Catholic School wasn't able to be here today. Her artwork was featured in the month of July, titled Safety Around Electrical Equipment. Congratulations to Brianna. Next, we have Rihanna Lalu of Flora Ridge Elementary School. Her artwork was featured in the month of August, titled Rihanna's Pool Rules for Safety Around Electricity. Congratulations, Rihanna. Thank you, Rihanna. Christine Broad of Celebration School. Her artwork was featured in the month of September, titled Don't Stay Near Metal During Lighting. Congratulations to Christine. We have Olivia Griffiths of Holy Redeemer Catholic School. Her artwork was featured in the month of October, titled Safety Around Electrical Equipment. Congratulations, Olivia. Now we have Diego Gutierrez of Highlands Elementary. His artwork was featured in the month of November, titled Safety Around Electrical Equipment. He was also the 2019 grand prize winner. Congratulations, Diego. And lastly, we have Ariana Garcia of Flora Ridge Elementary School. Her artwork was featured in the month of December, titled Electricity and Water Do Not Mix. Congratulations, Ariana. I also like to recognize Yvette Trejo, the art teacher of Holy Redeemer Catholic School, who's also here today. We had 5 winners this year from Holy Redeemer Catholic School, including our grand prize winner. Thank you, Mrs. Trejo, for all your hard work as well. Thank you to all students that entered the contest, and we hope to see you again this coming school year. Have a great day.
Once again, thank you, and congratulations to all the calendar winners. And don't forget, we're starting another contest shortly now that school starts, so be prepared to re-enter. We've had multiple winners in the past, and you're excused now to go out to the front of the building to take a lovely picture. Thank you.
Chair, we've got two service awards this afternoon and our Employee of the Month for August 2021. But we'll begin with recognizing Mr. Thomas Nix, who was not able to be here today. He's a certified system operator within our operations department, and we're recognizing Thomas for 5 years of service to KUA. Thank you, Thomas. Ms. Dalton. Elisa Dalton is manager of customer service, billing, and collection with our customer service department. We're recognizing Elisa for 15 years of service to KUA. Thank you. I don't think she could tell I was smiling. But I was smiling. Okay, Mr. Ken Bevel, would you come up and join me? Ken Bevel is our manager of GIS in our operations department. Ken, how long have you been with KUA?
36 years.
And has done an amazing job with our GIS system and helping us track our assets in the field. One of your coworkers nominated you for Employee of the Month, and they have this to say about you. Ken has gone the extra mile for KUA his entire career. The GIS he's created is known throughout the industry and is an example of all to follow. Faced with COVID and staffing challenges, the GIS data and applications continue to be crucial to KUA operations. Ken is always thinking of KUA as a whole, shown by his efforts to involve all departments in using GIS to its full potential. Despite losing two veteran members of his team, Ken has orchestrated the GIS data to be set up to date and of the highest quality. He ensures the right data gets to the right people at the right time. GIS, web, and mobile applications have increased KUA's efficiency and analytic capabilities. Integration with CIS, Responder, Cogsdale, and the recently implemented customer communication systems show GIS is the backbone for making things run at KUA, and Ken is primarily responsible for that. Ken, I appreciate everything that you have done and that you continue to do for us, and I can think of a better employee than you for Employee of the Month for August 2021. I would love to introduce you to our board, but first let's take a picture.
One, two, three. One more.
Are you smiling?
Yes.
Our vice chair, Director Tegna.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Good job.
Mayor Gonzalez. Director Sanchez.
Congratulations.
Thanks, sir.
You're getting
hands. I know.
And Director Hemphill.
I got a couple of items. There's some reserved parking.
Very nice.
And a day off with pay. Even enjoy.
Thanks for
you're welcome.
On Zoom, we've got Director Van Meter. I don't think you can see her. There she is. She's needed. But thank you, Ken.
Great. Thank you.
Well done.
We'll move on to item E on the agenda. Hear the audience. Anyone in the audience would like to address the board? Seeing none, we'll move on to F, consent agenda. I will entertain a motion to approve the minutes of July 7th, 2021 board meeting.
I make a motion, so.
Second.
Director Ray makes a motion. Director Sanchez seconds it. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion approved. Public hearing. Anyone in the public would like to? We have none there. Informational presentation. Brian, I'll turn that over to you.
Yes, Mr. Chair. We've got one informational presentation this afternoon, Kissimmee Valley Livestock Show and Fair presentation. We've got with us this afternoon Mr. Larry Berry, who is the general manager of that organization, whose purpose is to foster the development of education, commerce, and industry as it relates to agriculture in Osceola County and the entire Kissimmee Valley area. KUA has historically provided a sponsorship for this organization, $10,000 for the last few years. And here to tell us how they have utilized that those dollars is Mr. Berry.
Thank you very much. Distinguished members of the board, thank you for allowing me to come here today. Give you a little background on our, first of all, let me say thank you, because KUA has been not only a sponsor and contributor to the Osceola County Fair, but I know that you are heavily involved in this community and do a lot for this community. So let me thank you for that as well. So our organization basically, as I said, is developing and fostering industry awareness and commerce and agriculture within Osceola County. We work closely with 4-H, Future Farmers of America, and organizations to support youth, and that's what we're about. And we're really committed to promoting agriculture as it relates to Osceola County and the area here. So a little bit about what your support does for youth. First of all, next year will be our 78th year for the Osceola County Fair. We issue scholarships annually. We've got seven primary $1,000 scholarships and three other $500 scholarships every year that we give out. And we've issued over $116,000, actually, with the checks that I just wrote over the past couple of weeks since I did this. We're at $120,000 now. We also provide premiums and awards for the youth that show and exhibit their animals and their creative arts and the 4-H displays there. And part of what you help do is to help with those, both our scholarships and our premiums, as well as supporting our fair overall. We also provide facilities for our exhibitors and our youth for animal programs and agricultural programs. Give you a little history of where we have gone with our program. In 2018, in the end of the year of 18, when I first came on board, in 2018, we had six large animal events, agricultural large animal events at our facility. This year, we have 13. So we have really expanded the program, provided a facility and a location for these kids to be able to get out and show their animals, to provide an educational venue. We actually are in one of the locations in the state of Florida where we provide ethics classes for the 4-H and the FFA members. So we're involved in both of it from an education standpoint as well as assisting these youth in their programs that they do. And we also have been very heavily involved also in our community, giving back to our community as well. So a little bit about our fair this last year. As you know, COVID kind of upset everybody's world over this last year here. And we didn't know going into the fair, because we were one of the first fairs in Florida to open up in 2021, what it was going to be like. Our attendance was down. We were at 62,000, where last year, the year before, we had 75,000. However, the community came out. They got involved in the fair, and we think we had a very successful fair for what time period we were opening the fair up at. And we really had, when it came to some of our proceeds with our carnival revenue and stuff, it was actually not very far off from where we were for the previous year. So we consider it to be a huge success. We also, of course, in COVID had tracked all the statistics of what was happening. We wanted to make sure we weren't going to be a super spreader event with what we had. We had a lot of safety protocol that we put into place, including some electrostatic sprayers for spraying down the seating areas in between acts, for extra janitorial for cleaning our facilities, hand washing stations, and hand sanitizing stations. And we gave away just about 10,000 bottles of hand sanitizer at the gates with the customers came in. But overall, it came back that the COVID cases after our fair, within 3 weeks after our fair, actually dropped in Osceola County. And in fact, Osceola County had notified us in the health department which we collaborated with and worked with a reopening plan, that there were no contributed cases as a result of the fair in regard to COVID, which we're very pleased and happy about. So we also work with the Department of Agriculture on that as well and submitted a plan to them, and cooperation of both the state and the local, as well as our safety and our janitorial team on board did a phenomenal job, we believe. Here's some of the things that the community said. I mean, the community was, I think, glad that we had our fair. They posted time and time again. We have hundreds and hundreds of postings of saying, thank you for having the fair. Thank you for doing this. It provided some kind of normalcy for us to get back to somewhat of a normal lifestyle again. And so we were very appreciative to our community for coming to the fair and supporting us, and they were very appreciative of us as well. KUA, as I said, has been involved with the Osceola County Fair for a number of years. We've got your banners up. We've got your logo everywhere. You're on our television advertising, our billboards, all of our print advertising. You have a permanent banner that's up in our arena. If you get a chance, stop by either during the fair or at other times, because that banner in the arena is more than there for just the fair. We put that up there to recognize our platinum sponsors, which KUA is, so that during those off-season events, everybody gets a chance to see KUA was a part of our operation. In the off-season, not with the fair, but off-season facilities, we attract approximately 10,400 people in the events that we have in our arena each year. So it gets seen by a lot of people during the year as well. So what does the future hold? We've got a lot of great things we're already planning on for 2022. We're already working on our entertainment. We've made some announcements on that. Said we're continuing to expand our programs, our animal programs. And again, KUA's logo will be seen by all those coming in. And we have people now that we're attracting programs because we've gotten to be known as one of the premier livestock agricultural event locations in the Southeast. We're now attracting events from Georgia, Texas, Michigan. We just had a couple months ago a hog show, which we had 1,300 entries from six different states and from, I think it was 64 cities within the Florida area, too. So we have a lot of getting a lot of recognition there, too, which is really great. Some of the ways we promoted our rock scavenger hunt. I don't know if you've seen that. It was posted on Facebook. It was a fun thing to do. The community really loved it. One of the rocks, actually, that we had, which were painted by some of our 4-H kids, had a number on the back of it. One of the rocks actually was placed here in front of your building. And there was a rhyme that went onto Facebook to try to solve the mystery as to where to find the rock. And so it was a fun thing to be able to do, and we're going to continue that again in 2022. We're also doing interviews with our sponsors and posting those on social media because we understand sponsorship is not an event. It's a process. In other words, to be able to work with you throughout the year, not just when we come and ask for money, we think is very important. And we have expanded our sponsorship program to make sure that our sponsors are recognized as much as possible and continue to find ways to be able to do that. We're also very proud of working with the Osceola County Schools. This last year, for the first time, we had a Battle of the Bands and a Battle of the Voices. Phenomenal event. Packed house for every performance for these kids. We got some really talented youth here in Osceola County. And being in high school and college band, when I was younger, I can tell you it brought back a lot of memories and brought a tear to my eye on a couple occasions with the young kids that we have. So, again, on behalf of KVLS and the Osceola County Fair, we want to thank you again for all that you have done. We really appreciate it. We're open also to suggestions. KUA has traditionally been the supporter of the student days on Thursday night and Friday for the fair, which is great, so the kids get in for free. And we appreciate that, and I know the kids appreciate it as well. So on behalf of KVLS, thank you so much, and thank you for what you do for Osceola County.
Thank you. Thank you. We have nothing on old business. New business.
Yes, Mr. Chair. We've got one item under new business, and it's seeking approval for an expenditure for engineering services to replace transmission facilities between our Meridia substation and OUC's TAS substation. And here to tell us a little bit more about that is Vice President Operations Larry Mattern.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. Hello, everyone. Hello, Ms. Van Meter. So the title pretty much gives it away. We have a project that we're going to do replacing poles. It's a three-mile stretch, and the first step of that project will be to get the engineering so we know how often we could replace or how far we'd put the new poles, environmental, all the things that comes along with that. Also with that will be the procurement and the purchasing of these, and then they'll also assist us in the construction management. So it's a three-mile stretch, and as Brian said, it goes from Meridia that you see down here at the bottom of the page. That's on Garden Street. That's going to the OUC Taft, which is, if you know where 417 goes over Orange Avenue, it's in that facility there, is in that area. So we got a three-mile stretch. It was built in 1978, and it was all wood except for three concrete structures at that time. And two of them are right there, and they're over the turnpike. So, you know, they've been there for 42 years. And then the other one's right up by Taft. So on the left is your wood poles. It actually says it's a wood pole. And that's the ones that they have a life of about 40 years, and they're 42 years old. So it's time for them so we can have storm hardening and reliability. None of them are in such bad repair that in the meanwhile that they're going to cave in, but we do need to get ahead of this. And then the two, we have the three cast concrete, and you can see those are the two on your right that are on either side of the turnpike. And those were they'll be replaced. It'll be a total of 16 poles that we replace. And going back, it was 28 poles originally, and they were wood. But in the meantime, down at the bottom, the red, that's those steel poles we've replaced already because there was highway projects. And then in other areas where you see that we have concrete in blue, that's other places where we've had, if a highway or something needed us to do some changes, we upgraded at that time. So that's why we're just on 16 to finish this out and make it new. So here's what we propose to put in, similar to what I've shown you in the past on what we did down at Kane Island, where they ran out the new steel poles, and you'll see these throughout our system. They have a life of 40 to 60 years. What we've taken out, as I said, they've had the wood have a 40-year life, so that's why I'm replacing the wood. These are the more modern design, can carry more weight, and we don't have to use as many poles in some areas. We can stretch longer. So the total budget for this job, which will be going into next year, is $3,310,000. Our proposal from Power Engineers, who we have a master service agreement with them and some other engineering firms. We've talked to some, and they seem to be the best fit to us and came in at a price that's fair and economical, and that's the $667,368 that we're asking you for. And it replaces 16 structures, as I said. And they will be doing the engineering, procurement, and construction management services. And if you agree, this is the recommendation. If you have any questions.
Make a motion to anyone?
I make a motion.
I'm moved.
Yeah, you had something, Ms. Director Van Meter?
Make a motion.
Okay.
I just said so moved.
Okay, thank you. Second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. And Larry, and I just want to say that thank you. This is also for the lifespan of the poles, which is great, but it also tails into the reliability of the system.
Yes, it does.
Which is probably the most important thing that we have to perform at. We know that they're going to last longer, but it's also when storms come through, they're stronger, so they're more reliable, and the customers are not going to be losing power under the old poles. So thank you. Staff reports?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We've got one staff report this afternoon, and it's for customer service. And Ms. Susan Posens, Vice President of Customer Service.
Good afternoon. Okay, we'll go ahead and get started. First of all, I typically update you on strategic goals and where we are on those. So you'll see here are four goals that have actually already been achieved. The first one, we have notices that either can be sent in Spanish or English via text or email. We have completed our customer satisfaction survey and achieved all of those goals. The AMI deployment is complete, and we have minimized the fluctuations in the number of days in a bill for our customers by changing our schedule now that we can get meter readings during the weekends and on holidays with our AMI system. So those have been achieved. Here's one that we continue working on, and this is to provide the option to receive or review customer bills in Spanish. We're still assessing exactly what's required to make this happen and the cost to do this. We are going out for an RFP for our billing vendor, and so it will be included for them to propose to us how this could be achieved and what it would cost. Another one that we're working on that you're very familiar with is our Level 3 EV Fast Chargers pilot, and we want to develop a charging hub for the community by the end of September. These, we have agreements for all of these are executed with the customers for the locations, and so now we're working on the engineering. And ultimately, when this is all done in 2021, we will have three small hubs. One will be at the City of Kissimmee parking garage, which will have a fast charger and some level two slower chargers. Two will be at Fantasy World Resort, which is right off of 192, and it will include a couple of fast chargers and some of the level twos. And the third one will be at Plaza del Sol, which is right off of 192. And we're working on some infrastructure there, some KUA infrastructure as well, to strengthen our system and beautify that area. So we're very excited about those three hubs that we're going to have eventually. So I thought I'd take you back to when this all started with our electric vehicle charging stations. In 2018, we installed our first one at Osceola Heritage Park. You can see it by the orange dot down in the lower right-hand corner. It was commissioned in 2019, so that's not a typo. That was when it actually became active. And now you can see where we are. We will have, in 2021, we will have 53 fast chargers, 53 electric vehicle charging stations in our territory. Eight of them will be fast chargers, and they're denoted by the red. You'll notice there's only six red circles. That's because two of the locations will have two fast chargers at each of those locations, which are near 192. As you recall, or you may recall, we talked about strategically locating these fast chargers. And two of the areas that we wanted to cover were on the outside or the edge of KUA territory by the turnpike. So we have two turnpike exits where that are in KUA territory, and we have installed fast chargers at each of those locations. You can see those denoted. You'll also notice just north of us, right outside of our territory, Duke has installed one right off the turnpike, and south of us, OUC has installed one right off the turnpike as well. So mission accomplished. This kind of shows you the charging sessions year over year, and I know it's a lot of information and difficult to look at. As we've installed more, there's more colors, more bars. You can see that they're being used more. But as a summary, the bright orange one in 2021, which is one of the highest uses, is the 7-Eleven by the turnpike. The light blue one is Cedar Plaza, which is the other exit by the turnpike. And then the olive green is actually at the courthouse, the fast charger that's at the courthouse. So our fast chargers are the ones, not surprisingly, that are getting the most use. But we are tracking this on a regular basis. And while it's not huge yet, as expected, revenues from this new electrification and this promotion of this new technology, we are bringing in some revenues, and it's growing as it should, and we expect it to continue growing. So this all started back in 2018, and I, for those of you that were on the board at that time, we had pulled together some cross-departmental teams, cross-functional teams of employees, and they looked at numerous ideas trying to figure out what new services we should be providing to our customers to improve our service and what potential new revenue streams we may have or what we could do to support electrification. So we had multiple teams. The one you've seen the results of, that's the EV team. They were looking at chargers and, you know, what should KUA be doing at that point in time in 2018 until now. We had another team that looked at backup generation. You know, what role should KUA be participating in as far as backup generation for our customers? This team deemed it to be very high capital intensive for us to purchase backup generation and so on and so forth. So they determined that the best role for KUA was to be an unbiased third party or a source of information, helping customers not only answer questions, but know which questions to ask. So that's the role that KUA plays with backup generation. One team looked at solar maintenance, and this team deemed that to be too high of a risk. There was such a wide range of quality of installation of solar systems on customers' homes. Some were very good, and some were not as good. And some of the companies that had done the installation were no longer in business. So they deemed this to be a little too risky for KUA to get into any type of maintenance of already existing solar systems. Team looked at programmable thermostats, and they determined that really the best role for KUA was to include it as a rebate through energy conservation programs, and that's what we do now. One team looked at commercial rebates, just trying to make sure that we're serving this customer segment as well as we can, and that continues. There were not any changes made at that time, but we are always looking at those programs. And then one team looked at what ended up being our lighting solutions program. And this we've spoken about a little bit. This is multiple things. Number one, we added two choices for our customers, including solar lighting. So as you can see that top right-hand photo, the customer is having problems with wiring on those poles, and the customer happens to be the city. And so what we did was we installed solar lighting there with motion detectors. And so it's taking care, meeting the needs of the city at that location while they don't have to go and replace poles and wiring and so on and so forth. So it's a great application of that. On the bottom, you'll see where the customer continues owning the pole and the electric service, all the wiring going up. But KUA takes over the actual fixture itself on the top, and we own and maintain that. So you can see what it looked like before and what it looked like after. And we have about 20 of these projects that we've worked on so far. And this is the difference in what it looks like. That's the before and after photo. KUA obviously is, this is part of our core strength. We have the knowledge, the skills, the ability, the trucks. So this is a really good fit for us and a great service to our customers. So that's what we did in 2018 up through now. So it's 2021. So we've launched four new teams to start looking at what should we do in addition to what we're already doing. So one team is looking at turnkey smart technology, where they would work with the customer and identify what smart technology they would like in their home or facility, and then determine what role KUA would play in that. Would we help them purchase it? Would we provide loans and put it on our bill? Would we actually contract getting stuff installed? So they're looking at that. And I don't have any of these answers yet. The second group, obviously, we have been experts in energy conservation for a very long time. So we've been making recommendations about what customers should be doing to make their home more efficient. But now they're going to look at, should we help them actually implement those recommendations? Should we hire the contractors? Should we again, provide the funding and spread it out over their bill, and I don't know what they've come up with yet. Another group is looking at electric vehicles, and what do we do next? You know, should we be working with the dealerships and promoting this new technology? Should we be looking at residential EV charging stations, and if so, what role should KUA play with that? Should we get involved in actually installing them in residence or not? So we have a team that's looking at that. And then the fourth team is looking at home protection plans. This can be anything from inside wiring, HVAC maintenance, water heater repair, HVAC repair, surge protection, you know, all of those different types of plans, which would put us on the customer side of the meter. And so that team is looking at that and determining, you know, should KUA be involved on the other side of the meter along with the smart technology and the energy conservation? What role should KUA play with that? So they're looking at that as well. So there's a lot of really exciting things going on, and these cross-functional teams include someone from finance, someone from conservation, someone from operations, IT helps us, legal helps us, risk management helps us. We just look at it from all the angles, and then the team comes up with the recommendations. So we're looking forward to hearing what they come up with. We continue our research on the smart poles and the components. As you know, we got a $125,000 grant for this through the deed grants through APPA. We have had some delays due to supply issues, so we're still struggling trying to get some of the components to test. We're still looking at testing the banners, the LED banners, the cameras and the LED lighting that we have out front. We have the EV charger out front. But we also want to do some additional testing out in the field with customers on how receptive they are, how much they want it, and how much they're willing to pay for it. Well, while that's all going on, we're still taking care of our customers. You know, very excited to have them come into the office. Year-over-year comparisons, our lobby visits are down about 20%. Our phone calls are down about 13%. Our chats are pretty much flat. Cashier transactions are down significantly. And there are some things that are either the same or increasing. Our scam calls or our scammers and the phone numbers that we've shut down is pretty consistent. We shut down 69 last year, and we've shut down 70 this year. So we're still getting those, and I will mention as a little side note, their most recent tact is to tell customers that they're not allowed to come into the KUA building unless they have proof of a negative COVID test result. So they continue to be more and more creative with what they are telling our customers, and unfortunately we still have some customers that are becoming victims to that. Some of the workload has remained the same, but some workload has gone up a little bit. So with all of the community assistance that's been available for our customers, we actually have the equivalent of a full-time employee that works solely with agencies to process payments, to make sure they know what it is, when it's due, and so on and so forth. So that has gone up a little bit. While it's much better service for our customers to do things online and provide us all the information to initiate service, our back end process is pretty much the same. We still have to make sure all the information is there, make sure it's accurate, get it into our systems, check for a deposit, bill a deposit, collect a deposit. So it's a much better experience for our customers, but some of those things are still occurring at about the same level. And then, just so you know, throughout these transitions, we've been encouraging our customers to use new channels to do business with us, which is more efficient and better for the company and better for the customers. We have continued to right-size. So since 2018, we've reduced 7 people out of the cashiering and lobby area. We continue helping customers with any way we can. Payment arrangements, you can see how many we've made over the last year, over $14 million. Almost 80%, 79 to 80% of these are all paid on time and in full. So we continue working with our customers. The commercial customers, you can see the county using CARES Act. That's what they had assisted the commercial customers with. Here we have the residential customer assistance. You can see that they've assisted over $500,000 from the county from CARES Act funding. Our Good Neighbor Fund, we continue using that. It's managed through the Council on Aging. They've assisted that 178 customers this year with about 51,000. You can also see how much LIHEAP is involved in assisting our customers, which is why we pay very close attention to whenever there's any conversation about LIHEAP funding at the federal level. You can see that it provides an awful lot of assistance for our customers. So all in all, it's been about $1.2 million in assistance for our customers this year. Community solar remains steady. We have not aggressively marketed this. It's been a little challenging during the pandemic. We certainly have been keeping people up to date about it. We've used social media. We've sent it on our bill as part of the one of the ads on the bill. So we're still promoting it, but we have not aggressively marketed it. And Tiffany and I will be getting together soon and start coming up with a plan on how we want to share that with our customers. Net metering continues to grow. We hit 2,000 just last week, and we have 158 that are pending in the hopper. So billing continues to be accurate, which I know that sounds like it's easy, but it's not. We're very, very proud of that. The numbers there that you see on the second bullet are the number of late notices that we send out a month, about 16,000 or in the year, and we've disconnected a little less than 1,200. In-house collections, we continue trying to collect payment on final bills before it goes to a collection agency. That's never a good experience for anyone. And so we try to take care of our, we could call them former customers, and not have it go to a collection agency. And all of those that we contact, we collect about 75% of it. So that has been a great, great thing for our customers. And then our write-offs, we have written off $218,720 this year. However, the net write-off, you can see, remains negative, which means we continue collecting more on old bad debt than the new debt that we're writing off. So with that, I'm open for any questions. I see hands already. Yes?
With the new the labeling of the new scams that are going on, is KUA identifying those new versions on any type of social media?
We have tried everything we can on social media, on bills, on everything, just encouraging our customers to call us. If we will not call you and demand payment, and we certainly will not ever tell you to pay with a prepaid debit card or anything like that. And so, you know, even though they're saying you can't go to KUA, they're still asking you to pay with a prepaid debit card. So the core message is still being missed. We've contacted and started working with the Council on Aging, trying to reach that group, and Tiffany's done stuff. So we continue pursuing it. But this was just one that just happened the other day, and unfortunately this customer paid, which just infuriates me.
The other question I had was on the EV fast chargers, because I noticed you indicated, you know, a good place to place one might be at a car dealer. Has any chance that there would be a pilot related to that?
Well, and I don't know if that's the place to put the charger or if we should work with the dealership to help them promote this technology and the electrification of driving. So that team is looking at that. But we've pretty much tapped out our pilot for our fast chargers. So these are, we thought we could only afford five or six at the most, and we were so efficient and effective that we were able to get eight of them installed. So, but we pretty much are, the pilot is pretty much done. The team, the people that have been working on EV chargers, they've come up with what it would cost for a customer to have a fast charger installed, similar to what we do with the level twos. I think you're all aware the level twos are, our relationship with our customer on those level two chargers is like a lighting agreement. So we recover all of the costs for the equipment, the installation, the maintenance, and everything through that agreement for those level two chargers. The pilot for the fast chargers, KUA, absorbed at your direction and approval, absorbed the cost for those getting installed so that we could learn. We could learn about, you know, how to install it, how it works, how customers interact with it, you know, what's the maintenance like, what, you know, all of that. So that was an investment in learning about electric vehicle chargers. So we're tapped out on fast chargers, unless you want to give me more money.
To us.
So.
Any more questions?
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Before I ask a question, I wanted to say congratulations with the AMI deployments being 100%. I'm sure that makes the connection and disconnection process a lot faster, which makes customers happier. So I congratulate you on that. On the EV chargers, again, you had mentioned there's a team looking at residences. When you say residences, individual homes or maybe like subdivisions who have community areas like a pool and all that, maybe planting one there, or is both on the table? Or
that's a great question, and it actually is both. We actually have Flora Ridge behind us. We've actually installed quite a few there, and because they were in the development stage, we were able to catch them during construction and have them do all of the conduit and make it ready, so it was cheaper and less intrusive to have to go after them. You didn't have to tear up new sidewalks and landscaping and everything. So those are great locations, multifamily locations. This team, since we're already doing that, this team is really, they're considering, I'm not really sure everything they're considering, because what happens is they come up with better ideas than, you know, we even dreamed of. But they're looking at all of it.
And as far as charging at level two, level three, or even in home, how do the rates work? Because I see your revenues, they're going up. That's great. But how does that work for consumers?
So the rate that we chose to put on our fast chargers, or actually on all of our chargers, is our demand rate, because that was very easy for us to explain. It is a high demand, you know, all at once. And so that's the rate that we've put for all of our chargers. So that's around 13 cents a kilowatt hour. If you get into the EV market and you look around, you will find other chargers that charge as much as 40 cents a kilowatt hour. So KUA's charging stations are very, very competitive. In addition, to help defray the cost of, we have a subscription with the company that collects the money from the person with the EV and their app, and then they send us the check, and they track all of the consumption and everything. So we collect a service fee from each customer that's accessing the station, so it's an access fee to help cover those costs. But we're very competitive. That's where we are right now. I don't know that we will always be there. That's what this team is looking at. Is that the right rate? Should there be a completely separate rate for EV chargers? But it is at a demand rate because of the high demand when you plug it in.
Excellent. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Director Van Meter, you have any questions?
No, I think they're doing a great job. Proud of them.
Okay. May I add anything? Okay, thank you. I have a comment, but I'll save it for my closing remarks.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we're going to hear from the attorney.
Good evening. Thank you, Mr. Chair, board members. Nice to see you tonight. Vice Chair Ortega and I had the pleasure of following up with Congressman Soto and the Senator's offices for Senator Scott, and Senator Rubio is part of the policymakers, APPA Policymakers Council virtual fly-in. We had an excellent meeting with Congressman Soto. The two things, we really focused on infrastructure with him because the bipartisan infrastructure bill is being considered as we speak. And we are very concerned that there might be something called asset recycling in the bipartisan bill. Asset recycling is a fancy way for talking about privatization. There were discussions apparently among some senators and even House members that there would be an incentive for the federal government would give local governments incentive to sell off their certain government assets, including municipal utility assets. So that would give local governments a perverse incentive to get out of the electric business, which I think in our case would be a terrible idea. Thankfully, that didn't go anywhere. There is some asset recycling language in the bill, but it's strictly limited to highways. So, and Congressman Soto is very sympathetic to our concerns about that provision being in there. Our argument's that if you want to raise money for infrastructure, allow us to start doing advanced refunding of our municipal bonds that we used to be able to do before the 2017 tax cut eliminated that. We have access to low interest rates in the municipal bond market, and it's a lot cheaper way and more efficient way to raise money for infrastructure than to just go out and buy a bunch of government assets. And Congressman Soto was very receptive to that argument. With Congressman Soto, we also discussed what's called the Clean Energy Standard. It may be in there's two infrastructure bills. There's the one that's being worked on this week. That's the bipartisan infrastructure bill. It's about $1 trillion. Some of that's repurposed money, but it's about $1 trillion. And then there is a $3.5 trillion budget reconciliation bill that will likely have no Republican support whatsoever. That's why they have to use budget reconciliation to get it out of the Congress and onto President Biden's desk. That bill may address environmental goals. It may address reducing carbon in the atmosphere. And there has been talk from the Biden administration about going to a clean energy standard in which 80% of all electric generation would be generated from non-emitting resources. That means only 20% would be available for natural gas, for example. And the goal is to have that done by 2030. And you think about that, we have 4 units of Kane Island, including Unit 4, which is one of the most efficient units in the entire state. Those all have useful lives, especially the Units 3 and Unit 4, way past 2030. FMPA has issued bonds to pay for those units. Bondholders will be holding that debt and getting interest on that debt going into the 2030s and 2040s. So it's not a good idea from a cost perspective. It's not a good idea from our bondholders' perspective. Congressman Soto was sympathetic to our concerns, and really the focus in that conversation was on a 2050 date, because natural gas is really a transition fuel. That's his word, and I think it's an appropriate word, to getting off of coal. So we had a good discussion with him. With the Senator Scott and Rubio offices, we had good discussions. They were very sympathetic on the clean energy standard. So I want to thank Vice Chair Ortega for the help on that, and those meetings went very well. I do have an update on the bipartisan infrastructure bill. We've had a chance to look at a summary of the text that APPA issued out. Again, there's nothing in there that's really frightening from "is this really going to hurt us" perspective. There are some things that may impact us on the positive side. It looks like they are earmarking $7.5 billion for EV charging infrastructure. Half of that may encourage public power entities to partner with private entities, say gas stations, or you mentioned car dealerships, Director Hemphill, to go after that funding. Another half would be available to government entities without having to partner. The devil will be in the details. That's not a lot of money when you look at all the utilities in this country. And everyone's going to be lining up. And what we've found in the past is that we hear these grand pronouncements about money being available, and they go, "Well, you're not close enough to I-4. So, look, if there's money to be had, we'll certainly go after it. It would be great. But we'll just have to find out how much is left and whether we qualify. There's also a cyber partnership language in the bill, which would encourage CISA, the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency. I always forget what the acronym stands for, but they work with our IT department to make sure that we're well protected against cyber attacks from the outside. but this bill would encourage the federal government to share information with us and vice versa, as opposed to just saying, well, what happened? Well, if the federal government has knowledge that they can share with us to prevent a cyber attack, they should be doing so. So those are the major aspects of the bill. We'll see if it comes into, if it becomes law. If it does, it'll probably happen this week. Staff, for any questions?
Any questions for the attorney? Okay.
I've got nothing for you this afternoon, besides other than your reminders.
Only reminders. Director Ray?
Yes, I'd just like to remind all the employees and the community at large that our friend COVID-19 is still around and the numbers are going up. So I encourage everyone to seek out and become vaccinated, because you never know when you might be visiting with someone and you had been exposed, didn't know it, and you might be reinfecting or actually infecting others. So consider that, not just yourself, but for the community at large.
Director Sanchez?
I'll just pigtail off her and inform yourselves, not only for yourself, for your family and your community. Nothing else.
Director Van Meter, any last words of wisdom?
Words of wisdom. Well, because of what I've been going through, I've been with the doctors a lot. And they're very concerned that, with this COVID uptick. It's really a lot worse, they think, than the first one was. So I think it's not to be taken lightly, as everybody else has said. And just, I know it's you're tired of it. You're tired of having to live by this way, but it's for your own good. So please, please do it.
Thank you. Thank you for those wise words. Mayor, Anthony, last minute?
No.
Nothing? Okay. I got a couple of things. Not much, but just a couple of things. On the infrastructure bill that the attorney mentioned, I'm glad that, Susan, what you said tonight, it puts up the forward thinking in the EV world. I remember back north, I used to write grants for money, and the first question always coming back was from the government was, what have you done in this field? What are you doing? And I think because all the initiatives that we've taken in this KUA is going to get, I know the money's not going to be as much as we think, but I think it will give us a competitive edge when we put our proposal in to the government saying this is what we're doing. We don't want money to start this business. We're already in the business. So I thank you for everything you guys are doing in this field. Very important as the future. And the second thing, Grant, we had a great meeting with the senators and with the congressman. I'm not going to go over it because Grant Elkhorn spoke about it, what we discussed. But I just want to make this statement. This young man here, he's a superstar in the public, in the legal public power world. He's a superstar. He's very respected everywhere. Everywhere I've gone with him, he's very respected. So I just want to thank you for what you do for KUA, Grant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You can't see me blushing under the
call you a young man.
That's nice. That's the best part.
Okay. Thank you for a great meeting. It went well. Everyone stay safe out there. Follow protocols. I know it's a pain, but whatever you have to do to stay safe and your family safe, it's important. Please do that. And with that, I adjourn this meeting.